It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Let me just quote the late, great Colonel Sanders, who said, I'm too drunk to taste this chicken.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sozi. I'll be there Sunday night.
Are you going to be there this time like you said you were going to be there in the Super Bowl? And
I know. There were too many people being snarky during the Super Bowl, so my laptop kept freezing up. So thanks for reminding folks about that, Cope. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. The fact that you were actually looking for my snark, because you don't
because I was going to do it, too. I was going to be there right with you.
Because you don't get there, enough.
I was waiting on it.
You don't get enough snark.
I was excited about it, because I was watching the game, and I was like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to see what Matt's going to be talking about.
But I wish anybody would say that. Oh. Said nobody ever. But the show, we also have a blog, which will hopefully get better, that you can read at...
Filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The man who can't stop watching Talladega Nights, that's Kobe Slagle.
Yeehaw. Yep.
Don't ever yeehaw on here.
Yeehaw.
And sitting in with us, we have a couple of guests. One who is here until he is yanked out and does real news on HD1. We have Todd Rayner, the director of marketing for Cannes, Fine Wines, and Spirits, who will be talking. He brought a jacket and a tie. You knew we were on radio, right?
I did.
We appreciate it, but it's really not necessary.
You're going to wear a tux. But...
You're lucky we're wearing pants. but I know I also have a feeling you came straight from work.
I did.
So that's that. Yeah, okay, that's fine. There's no casual Friday. And so anyway, we're going to talk about Wine Fest in just a little bit. And
Winefest!
You're Mickey. Yes. Kobe, who sounds like either 98% of all college men, which is
stoked,
or he sounds like the Hansborough brothers. So, anyway, that's over there. And from the Film Yap, Christopher Lloyd. Do we have a Chris Lloyd piece of audio? Because I love
Chris Lloyd piece of audio.
We do. We have. You've given so much to the show. You've subbed the show. You've been a guest on the show, and you've given us such wonderful pearls of audio goodness. Like,
yeah, it's not hella bad.
How are you, Chris?
I'm doing real good. It sounds like I'm the Joan Rivers to your Johnny Carson.
Oh gosh, but you'll never. I will never ban you unless you really screw me over. So. And your face moves. So no, you're not really Joan Rivers. So it's all right. All right. Winefest is next week.
Yep.
Where are we? New location this year.
New location.
Which is
Historic Union Station.
Historic Union Station. I will be emceeing the event along with Travis D. Nicola of Art of the Matter. So, but that'll start at 6 o'clock. We're going to figure out what next week's show's Film Sociology is going to be like when it comes to that. There's once a year where Film Sociology and Indie Wine Fest just kind of collide a little bit. We'll figure that out.
We'll get there.
And hopefully you will be there as well. This is our biggest fundraising event of the year. Lots of wine to taste, lots of food to eat, lots of hands to shake. We'll be there shaking hands and tasting a little bit. Just a little. And of course, the proceeds from all the wine purchased that evening, 10%. Is it 10? Have we raised it and not told anybody? No. Some of that proceeds goes to WFYI. Todd, I think I just did your job. I'm sorry.
Actually, thank you very much. I'm just going to go now and go
so,
drink some wine.
I say from con standpoint, because you guys are big supporters of the event, when do you, Todd Rayner, start working on Winefest? Last year? The day after last year?
Well, yeah. Our owner, Jim Arnold, really has a big part in it. And they're always trying to make it better and add new wrinkles. So, I mean, it's really a constantly evolving thing. I mean, you know, just after this year's done, they'll start, you know, very slowly planning next year. And then, obviously, it ramps up, you know, the last couple of months and stuff. So.
And, Jim, we hope you're doing well. Hang in there, sir. So we'll see you hopefully next week.
Yeah.
Folks who have not been to Winefest before, first off, shame.
Yes.
Second off, what are folks going to see at Winefest that I haven't already blown a cover on?
Well, yeah. Well, there's wine and food everywhere, just like you said. But the, you know, an additional cool thing, let's say you're new and you want to sort of get into wine and don't really know where to start.
You don't know if you can taste oak and chocolate and oak and dirt and
undertones. You can't sort of sing the song or talk the talk or all that kind of stuff. Well, we're going to have a little wine class about how to taste wine at the beginning of this thing. And
don't gulp it like Thomas Hayden Church, okay, Kobe?
That's right. That did not go well.
Are you chewing gum?
Yeah. And but you will be able to maybe talk a little bit more like Miles in
sideways.
And maybe describe what's going on in a glass. Because, you know, you got to think, why do we say that wines taste like cherries or oak or vanilla or strawberry? It's because wine's a complex substance, and we're trying to make it, you know, give you something to sort of relate to. You know what cherries taste like. You know what strawberries taste like. This is a combination, sort of amalgamation of all that kind of stuff. So come and we'll teach you how to taste like wine like a pro, and we'll teach you, you know, what to look for, how to taste, what certain grape varietals are supposed to taste like. And hopefully you learn a lot in a tiny amount of time at the beginning of this thing. And obviously can't have a better cause out there as well. So.
And food combinations.
We'll get into that a little bit too. Yeah, I mean, I have 20 minutes to talk, so not too much.
You got a week. Have you started writing the script yet?
I don't know. I'm gonna start rehearsing in front of my mirror tonight. So later, with a couple glasses of wine in me,
and lit candles.
That's right. I'm gonna set the mood.
We knew the guy who did this in college with his guitar. So don't be that guy.
That's right.
So now I'm curious. What wine have you had recently that is of note?
Oh, goodness. That's a there's lots of them.
Yes,
but,
I know.
But I think we had a little Bordeaux tasting event the other night, and had the 2006 Clos Forte, which is a right bank Bordeaux from Saint-Emilion, and just an absolute showstopper of a wine. Big, rich, complex. I mean, got blueberries, plum, you know, a little bit of mint. It just kept going and going, and just hard to not be madly in love with it. And it'd go with all kinds of food, everything from lamb to duck to any number of things. So really enjoyed that, and among other things too. So
something definitely to look forward to next Friday,
big time.
I'm sure there's going to be some Bordeaux. I think Clos Forte we've already sold all.
Yeah, I'm saying that sounds pricey. So
it was, but you know that brings up an interesting thing. Is, you know, we have the connoisseurs area at the WFYI event, it costs $120. Again, you know, a big chunk of that's going to WFYI to help out. But
now he's doing my job. That's good.
We're about synergy here.
Yeah.
We're working through it.
Right.
But to me, the cool thing about that connoisseurs area is, you know, think about the price of that wine is 30 to 100 and more. So good luck finding a lot of that stuff by the glass in a restaurant because they're not out there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want the opportunity to taste numerous, you know, $40, $50, $60, $70, $80, $100 bottles of wine and help a great cause, maybe pop for that, you know, make an evening of it.
And by the way, with the connoisseur, you get a bigger glass.
And a bigger glass.
I know. as Miss Associates informed me, do we have any wine glasses that doesn't have your radio station on it? it's a set, dear. So.
And to me, that's that particular ticket is just – it's just an absolute must. I mean, it's going to help WFYI out a lot. And then, I mean, just the wines you're going to get to have, trust me, you won't be able to go out.
You'll get your money's worth in one way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. So it's really going to be a ball. Both rooms are great, but to me, the concert area, throw the 120 down and have a heck of a time. So I don't know what I can say there.
No, that's good. That's good. So well, good. Well, hang out, you know, and if you have any questions, movie otherwise, or what film goes with Dwayne Johnson movies.
Wine pairings could be fun.
There you go. So we'll get to a little bit of that. Now, let's get Snitch out of the way, and then we'll get into the serious Oscar picks. Now, I've been working on a show while we're in Shameless Plug Department. The Trip to Bountiful opens actually the same night as Winefest, a week from tonight at Scottish Rite Cathedral, 262-3100. You call that for tickets. It's running the first, Friday the 1st, Saturday the 2nd, Friday the 8th, Saturday the 9th, 7:30 p.m. all nights. There's also a 3 p.m. matinee on Saturday the 9th at Scottish Rite Cathedral. It's that gorgeous giant building that you can actually go into and see live theater from time to time. So we'll check that out. And so because I've been working on that, I did not get a chance to see Snitch. You got to see the latest from Dwayne Johnson. By the way, I was talking with Jeff Marker, my friend from a colleague down in Georgia, and he had a – you'll appreciate this. He had a review with the Gainesville Times, and, of course, quite often the writer does not get to write the headline of his piece. And his review was Rock is stuck in a hard place. With the film Snitch. So, and I think Dwayne Johnson seems like a nice enough guy. I think folks got to stop calling him The Rock.
Yeah.
I think he's.
I was just going to ask, have we dropped Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
Yeah.
Is The Rock gone now?
It's gone. Unless Vince McMahon writes him a big check and he shows up at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
that time is the exception to the rule.
I think he did something within the last couple of years where he's, you know. From,
well,
you
wait. I think Joe Shearer might be texting the correctives in 3, 2, 1.
But yeah, he is just Dwayne Johnson now.
Yeah.
No Rock, the thank you. But unfortunately,
so he's John Mellencamp of action movies.
Yes.
Always going to be Johnny Cougar.
Great. He's always, and he's going to be bitter when there's young action stars taking over his genre. I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah. Well, remember, The Rock was, you know, supposed to be this new generation of action stars, the youngsters coming in to take over for all the old guys.
Now he might be in an Expendables 4
yeah.
within the next decade.
I think he just turned 40, so even the young
guys are
getting old now.
Well, so he's in Snitch, and I also know this is a sign because he's got other actors of note working with him. Most notably, Susan Sarandon,
mm-hmm.
who, from what I've seen, it looks like in her scenes, it is a take on the legal system and the problems of it. She just happens to be surrounded by a movie with lots of banging and booming and crashing and fire and beating people up.
Yeah, yeah. And she plays like a very conservative right-wing meanie in the movie.
Well, it is acting.
So, yeah, definitely some acting there.
Yeah. So let's play the audio. And I think, Kobe, we will let you
very
be.
Very conservative right-wing meanie. Just want to make sure everybody heard.
You're wrong! And, Kobe, I think this is a trailer. You can choose. You can be either Crow or Tom Servo. And I think you can talk over the trailer on this one.
Let's have a listen.
Yeah.
I should have never taken that package.
Droning.
I'm not a drug dealer. I swear to you, Dad.
Exposition.
Yep.
Of course I believe you. This is a federal case. The mandatory minimum laws are very simple.
Facts.
Jason is facing 10 years in prison.
10 years?
Get down! On the ground!
Yelling.
United States versus Jason Collins.
I believe in the mandatory minimum laws.
Acting.
Please, I just want to help my son.
We need your son to help us make arrests before we can help him reduce his sentence.
But like setting someone up? I won't do it.
But he will.
What if I did it for him? What if I helped you make arrests? We have ex-cons who are working the yard all the time.
Maybe there's someone with a connection.
I'm trying to get my life in order, okay? I'm not doing that for my family.
I just need an introduction into that world.
Benjamin Bratt.
And let's have an honest conversation as to why you in my career.
I'm in the construction business. I don't have product or distribution.
Slow motion shots.
Anyone needed transportation? I can provide that.
Sound like he's ready for the game.
Your driver. He handled the situation very well.
John
we
Voight, Anaconda accent.
You got any idea who we're dealing with?
This guy's the Mexican paramilitary, and he runs this region for the Nuevo León cartel. Well,
when you work for us, you will be treated like family.
This, of course, includes your wife and your client.
This is the last stop. You complete this, and the judge that credibility
with Susan.
Will release your son.
I love you, Jason.
You play nice with the feds, man, but what happens when everyone finds out you're an informant? They're gonna come after our families, John.
There is no way I'm gonna let either side dictate our fates.
Not really catchphrase.
No way.
Every move that I make, or I don't make, Jason will have to live with for the next 10 years of his life.
And what if you don't live?
Wow.
white wet blanket.
You follow the drugs, you get players. You follow the money,
yeah,
you get a kingpin.
Yeah, you know that he's never coming back. Hey, John, you sure can pull this off? Trust me.
That's what it says.
All right.
So, I'm sorry, as opposed to good alternative music? No, I'm kidding. That's terrible. Okay, so lots of shooting and more
it
shooting.
It wasn't as much as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be overloaded
you know what?
With stuff.
Because it's not directed by Michael Bay.
Well, actually, okay. There really isn't that much shooting in the movie. So let me
So a deceiving trailer. No yes. way.
Let me disabuse you of a notion here. This is not an action movie.
No, but it has Dwayne Johnson. It has The Rock.
I know.
Well, he was in that movie about where he was the Tooth Fairy or something.
That didn't have action. That had a hockey action.
Oh, I don't know.
Let the man speak.
Let's, I just know that he did.
Yeah, we know you did.
No, this is pretty much a straight drama in which he does not play a Superman. He's playing an everyday kind of guy. There are several scenes in here where The Rock, or Dwayne Johnson, I should say.
See, you're part of the problem now.
Kind of gets his.
You're not helping.
He kind of gets his rear end handed to him.
Really, but then does he get that extra boost of energy at the end? And then,
nope.
Oh no, those are his matches. Sorry.
Nope. Let me tell you a little story.
Please.
So for some reason I don't know why none of the other critics showed up at the screening.
I gave you my excuse.
Except for Mark Dubik, he showed up. Everyone else
stayed away.
And so the press row at the end, you know, if it's not filled up, they. Throw some people who are waiting to
get
in.
Oh, yes. Go on.
So they threw some people in at the end who promptly sat down next to me and talked through the entire movie.
Ooh.
And my shushes did nothing. I have ineffectual shushes.
But you had the little
Let's
piece.
Let's hear one.
You know.
Shush.
Did you really say shush?
No, I just kind of said like
shush. But you have the little piece of paper on your seat that says press.
Yeah. Ah. So you know. Creative writer that I am, if you go to my review on thefilmyap.com, you can see where I incorporated their play-by-play into the review itself. But her most notable thing that one of them said was, I just want to see The Rock be The Rock. And I think that's what most people who are going to go into this movie...
Oh, they're going to be angry.
They want to see The Rock being a big, tough guy, blowing people away, and doing catchphrases after he blows them away. This is a straight drama. He does finally get into some action at the end. But it's of an average guy who's in duress and life is threatened, and he's totally vulnerable. And I don't know what to tell you. He is Dwayne Johnson. If this keeps going, this is a successful transition away from The Rock, and The Rock is dead.
But aren't we going to get to see him do some action stuff with G.I. Joe?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but we're not talking about
that.
Yeah,
I think when he's in a G.I. Joe co-starring Bruce Willis and...
And they're bringing back Channing Tatum. They're letting Channing Tatum live because he's... more popular than both of them combined.
I think he'll do
quote
some of those
Joe
stuff.
Shear, the human washboard.
Great.
Yeah. But people can see him do action stuff, and they can see him do drama stuff.
Yeah, but they want to see it every single time. See, this, my favorite bit of this is when I saw Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah.
People were furious that it wasn't The Water Boy.
They wanted Adam Sandler.
They wanted Adam Sandler to scream and fall down and yell and sing off key. And you had an actual director telling him to do things.
Same thing here. And Dwayne Johnson. He makes some really bad stuff. You know, Race to Witch Mountain, obviously just done for to make a kiddie movie for
Tooth
fun.
Fairy that you Tooth you brought Fairy. Mr. Slagle.
Yeah. The Game Plan. We could.
Oh
go
yeah,
on.
I saw that. Yeah. But Walking Tall or anything with the WWE studio logo on it.
But I think his years in the ring, trained him as a performer. He's actually got some chops hidden in there. I always tell people about when they make fun of Dwayne Johnson, go rent Be Cool, the not very good sequel to Get Shorty.
Get Shorty.
Which he plays a gay cowboy assassin and is hilarious and steals every scene he's in.
And I remember, I think he's hosted SNL at least once.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's done it twice, but I remember that. And he's funny in that. Because he has an outlet where he's not under Vince McMahon's thumb. He's able to do what he wants. So good for him on that.
Yeah, I can't remember whose review I read it in, but they said, about Snitch that you could really take any number of, higher profile, middle profile actors, just regular guy types, and, plug them into this movie, and it would be, there would be no, it would be pretty seamless.
I talked with Jeff Marker about this, and I wanted to get your, would this be something 40 years ago with Charles Bronson or Burt Reynolds or somebody of that ilk? No?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Or Robert Duvall?
Maybe. I mean, like, the one name I heard someone say in that review that I remember was Edward Norton. They said Edward Norton could have starred in this movie, and it's true.
Okay.
So, if you're looking for a Rock, The Rock movie, you're not going to like this. But if you want an actually decent drama, I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, it's not hella bad.
No, he didn't say it was hella. He didn't even say it was close to hella bad.
But I don't.
But you want to use a Chris one.
Well,
that's okay.
Yeah, but I don't feel like it's.
Now that was a good movie.
I don't feel like it gets that one though.
It's a. I've been told decent B movie.
You know what? Is it a pot boiler, Chris?
pots will be boiled.
And your hearts were not tucked. Anyway, we're not jerked. Okay, so well, it's actually. It's actually got a good chance. Well, I say it has a good chance box office wise if nobody goes see Argo over the weekend because they've re-released that in theaters.
Yeah, they re-released it.
Very smart on their part. But it's also, see, Dark Skies, you have Kerry Russell and Scary House.
Nope.
We know, Kobe. We know you won't see it, even though Kerry Russell's in it. You have One Life, which is a documentary narrated by Daniel Craig, and then that's it. So
pretty light weekend.
Pretty light weekend.
For whatever reason.
I wonder why.
For whatever reason, Oscar weekend is usually not a big time for big movie releases.
That's because they're watching the geeky Film Geek Super Bowl that is the Academy Awards on Sunday evening.
The one exception I can remember that is, this must be 10 years ago now, when it was weekend that Liar Liar came out with Jim Carrey.
Oh, yes.
And they had him as a presenter. So he just walks out on the stage and puts his arm out and says, "How was your weekend?" "Mine was great."
Well, let's move into the Academy Awards, which is Sunday night, starting at it says 7 o'clock on ABC, but isn't like the first half hour just catwalk nonsense.
Yeah, I don't think the actual
maybe
telecast
8 o'clock.
Is 8.
What do you, Kobe? You're giving me
hold
the
that
index
thought.
Finger.
Before we get into this,
yes.
If you don't have any plans tonight or this weekend,
oh yes, thank you. You're doing your job,
and it's okay if you don't.
You're stealing my bits. Yeah. Go on. What's going on at the IMA tonight? It's part of their series, right?
At the IMA tonight, 7 o'clock, The Night of the Hunter.
Oh, great. Great Robert Mitchum thriller directed. The only one and only directorial effort
by Charles Laughton. The film bombed at the time.
Really bad.
And he never got another chance to direct.
And that's really sad because Mitchum at his most diabolical, Lillian Gish, Shelley Winters, I mean, just Peter Graves, excellent film. This is the film I watched on Halloween this year.
Fun story. I went to add Night of the Hunter to my Netflix queues because, believe it or not, I've never seen it.
Wow.
And instead, some other movies came up, including Night of the Hunted.
Night of the Lepus.
Which I actually watched, which is a 1980 French horror exploitation flick.
And so, how was that?
Pretty schlocky.
Okay.
Pretty schlocky.
Yeah, probably, I think Night of the Hunter's better.
Yeah.
And tonight at IU Cinema, 6:30 Festival of Appropriation, 2012 Experimental Shorts Program. And then Saturday and Sunday, Saturday at 3 and 7, and Sunday again at 3, Rust and Bone.
Oh, the Mary Cotillard film's already down there. All right.
And Sunday evening, 6:30, The Magistrate.
They're showing a movie on Sunday night?
They're showing a movie Sunday night.
Boy, that's
Do we ever serious. Get Rust and Bone here?
We did. Ed gave it, Ed Johnson, our colleague at Nuvo, gave it a very good review. Okay. It only lasted a week.
Yeah, I saw it on, they actually gave us DVD screeners for that one, so I did see it, but I couldn't remember if it showed up here or not.
You got a screener for that?
I did.
Not happy. Okay. Because I guess I put in the paperwork to be the Marion Cotillard correspondent, even though it's my show.
You have to file paperwork. It's like filing the paperwork.
You want to change the titles for Emma and Fair Sweet Bianca.
Well, and rightfully so. But it's like filing the paperwork for switching sports team allegiance.
I'm sorry, guys. We're having a business meeting. We're having a production meeting on the air, as usual.
So you're upset about me getting a screener but not Ed. I see.
No, Ed's... Wow.
Yeah. We all know that Ed is the film critic who swings the biggest stick in this town.
I know. He is Buford Pusser. He's walking tall. The original, not the one with Dwayne Johnson. So. And he's Joe Don Baker, not Bo Svenson. Let's never forget that, ladies and gentlemen. Wow, we're getting into 70s driving.
Y'all love
fair.
It. So
we all do love it. And right behind him, Bob Bloom.
Ooh.
He wields the northern stick.
He is Mr. Video Master. They will send him anything and everything.
And we want to say, because I don't want to get into it too much on here, but Bob, love the email. Way to
way
help,
to go, Bob.
Help
Kudos.
Us, Doughy guys and Chris. Because you're svelte by
slightly less svelte by comparison.
Doughy
peers,
and,
yeah.
and glassy. But anyway, so the Oscars are Sunday night, and I will be if my laptop doesn't freeze up like during the Super Bowl, I'll be on Twitter at Matthew Sosi, so you can see whatever snarky remarks I make. What is the Film Yap doing on Sunday?
Same thing. We'll be live blogging the Oscars as we've done every year, I think, since the start of the Film Yap, and probably throwing a few tweets out there. I'm at Christopher Lloyd because, for whatever reason, they don't make it long enough that I can put my whole name in.
Oh, okay. Kobe, what are you doing?
Oh, I don't know.
You grilling something, and you and First Sweet Bianca are going to watch? You know she's going to have the pennants that say Les Mis and
no.
Anna Karenina.
No. No, hang on. You
what?
Know what?
No. So you're rooting against Les Mis?
Yes. I'm sorry. I just for
can't
one
put
thing
a word a sentence together.
For
apparently.
One thing, I don't get it. I don't understand the obsession with it. To me that musical is
not the stuff.
No, it is not the stuff by any stretch of the imagination. And then the movie based on it, I've never seen a stage version of it, but I'm because so many people talk about it, it's like, oh, this is the best musical of all time. This is the best. This is
no,
the best.
No, that's
whatever.
Far from it. Far,
and,
far from
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. But there's all this hype around it, and then, you know, you go to the movie to see it, and it is not that
see,
at
gonna,
all.
I'm going to pull up my black socks now because it's not you, of course, but I'm looking in your general direction. But your ilk, that every other thing is the greatest thing ever or the worst thing ever. Todd, see, Todd's nodding. What are you doing Sunday, Todd? You should come follow us on Twitter.
I'll look you up.
Okay.
I'm going to look up Chris right now.
There he is. So, okay. So we go to the awards. Now, of course, I tend to do what, you know, my heart picks and then what my head picks. And then I don't know what I'm going to put on the ballot when I have my annual bet with Laura Jansen and Nicole Havelka. That's another story for another time. But we have 9 films because everybody has to have a trophy in a juice box, except for Skyfall. I'm not bitter, but there's 9 nominees. Here we go. Amour, Argo. By the way, Argo reissued on DVD, re-released in theaters today, put out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Wise move. Beast of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, Les Mis, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook, Zero Dark Thirty. Chris Lloyd, what do you think?
Zero Dark Thirty is not going to win. There's a serious backlash in Hollywood against it, including there's actually been like an organized effort of people telling folks don't vote for
it. Not since Ernest Borgnine in Brokeback Mountain have we had such an organized.
And I think it's going to cost the movie big time. I don't think it may win screenplay, but that's probably the only thing it has a shot at.
You don't think
maybe
you don't
editing?
Think, I would say
editing.
You don't think Jessica Chastain has a shot?
No,
really,
I don't think she's going to.
I think she might be the. I thought she would be the reverse of Sacrificial Lamb. Is you can say what you will about the film, but you can't deny her performance.
Yeah, but Jennifer Lawrence has kind of swept the preliminary awards. I mean, there's been a couple of those things like Golden Globes where they have a musical comedy category. Why anyone thinks Silver Linings Playbook is a comedy, I don't know.
That's okay. Where people think Christoph Waltz is a supporting role, but that's another discussion for another time.
Yeah. But so they've split that. But for the most part, Jennifer Lawrence has won, including, I think, the SAG Award. So I think it's going to be Jennifer Lawrence is going to win that.
Okay.
And somehow we get onto that off of Best Picture.
Well, I would say it seems like the only two films that are being talked about are Lincoln and Argo.
Yeah.
Lincoln because that screams Best Picture. It's important.
It's a King's Speech. It's a costume historical
drama. It's important and historical, and it's Spielberg and John Williams, and there's one of two locks in the category in the Oscars. Not taking anything away from Ms. Lawrence, but Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, he is a mortal lock.
Yeah, that's you know, put your money down on that. And the other one is Argo because there's been a really big groundswell of emotions and awards, and not necessarily because Ben Affleck didn't get a best directing nomination, although I think we'd love to see him hop up on stage and take one. So
I think there is a sympathy movement, or it's a unbacklash or a rebacklash, but whatever you want to call it.
But this is also a piece of American history, maybe not as big and important, but it's also a heist film.
Yeah,
it is. It's like Apollo 13, in which, you know, if you study, you know the results, but you're still clinched, exactly, especially in the airport. And I think Argo's a better film than Lincoln. So it would not surprise me, I think, if Argo wins Best Picture. But I just have a feeling that it's going to go to Lincoln.
I think it's going to go to Argo. Again, it's pretty much swept all of the preliminary awards. And Ben Affleck has swept all the directing preliminaries, including the Directors Guild, which has been historically one of the best prognosticators of who will get the Oscar. I think Affleck was a victim of the classic example of where everyone says, I mean, because it was so universally admired when it came out back in September, is everyone said, well, I know he's going to get nominated, so I want to vote for something else, for something smaller, like this Michael Haneke from Amore, or that kid that no one's ever heard of from Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Which, by the way, Beasts of the Southern Wild is still my number one film of last year.
Yeah, but people wanted... So the idea was, everyone said, well, everyone's going to vote for him, so I'm going to throw my...
And then nobody voted for him.
And not enough people did. This is what's known as the Paul Giamatti vote.
Ah.
After Sideways from a few years ago, where his entire cast got nominated except for him.
Yeah, that wasn't cool. Not cool at all.
So I think that's going to end up happening is he's going to win. Argo is going to win as kind of the consolation prize for Ben Affleck not getting nominated for a director.
Well, that's not bad. Yeah. That's not bad. So, Todd, you got any... I mean, strictly from an audience standpoint,
I definitely see where you're going with the Lincoln thing. I think it's a big enough slice of sort of the ooey gooey films that everybody likes to watch. You know, mm-hmm. good story. I can see that. You know, it's good. You see lots of stuff from the past that have won that has some things in common with that. That it does make sense to me that. That Lincoln has a really good shot.
And I would really push for it if he didn't go to the theater.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's my major... Well, and I wasn't crazy about the family aspect. As much as my, you know, I know Sally Field got a nomination, and I know Joseph Gordon-Levitt shows up, but that subplot didn't do a whole heck of a lot for me. So it was between that and going to the theater, they could have sliced 20 minutes off the film easily.
Yeah, see, my biggest problem with Lincoln, it's still a wonderful film. It made my top 10 list.
Yeah, it still
is. The weaknesses that it has are in the screenplay. I think the screenplay really has some problems. It has that, you know, has the perfect ending for the movie, and then it tacks on that completely unnecessary ending at the end. It has the family stuff doesn't work. It's very self-referential in that you keep having these things where people, particularly the Mary Lincoln character, refers to how I'll be perceived 150 years ago, maybe when they're making a movie about me. You know, it's like, oh, I'll just be remembered as Lincoln's crazy wife. And I mean, I hate that stuff like that. So the screenplay has a lot of problems. I think Lincoln has won almost none, hasn't done very well at all in any of the preliminary awards. I think the consensus on Lincoln is it's a great, great performance with just a pretty good movie around it. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think it's a very good movie, but it does have those screenplay problems.
So Kobe, what pennant are you flying Sunday night?
Well, I didn't see most.
That's all right. You can still have an opinion. You can have an opinion. I try not to actually shoot you in the face.
I think Lincoln. I could see Lincoln winning. I don't really want to because I think I'm afraid people will vote for it because they feel they should vote for it, and not because they really think agree with
all right.
being the best film.
All right, so there's that. So we've talked. Daniel Day-Lewis is a lock. The other lock is Anne Hathaway
for
best supporting actress for Les Mis.
We were mentioning off air before we came on. Daniel Day-Lewis wins. He'll be the first actor to win an Oscar for portraying a U.S. president.
Which I did not know. No. That's the last one I could think of is Jeff Bridges in The Contender, who is definitely the coolest president in cinema history.
Yeah, we also mentioned if Argo ends up winning Best Picture, it will be the first picture to do so that was not nominated for Best Director since Driving Miss Daisy in 1990. And before that, it happened twice more in the very early days of the Oscars in the late 1920s and early 30s with Wings and
Grand Hotel.
So it's only happened three times.
This is your pledge dollars at work here at Film Sociology.
I did my research at lunch today.
That's right, you did. So, all right, so that's a lock. We talked about Best Actress. Apparently it's going to be going to Jennifer Lawrence. Although I do want to say big kudos for this year having the youngest and the oldest Best Actress nominees between 85-year-old Emmanuel Riva, who was fantastic in Amour, and Quivenzhané Wallace, who, you know, was 9 and had an entire film on her shoulders, and she carried it really well.
She was actually only 6 when they made the movie.
Really?
They made it a while ago, and she just turned 9. So can I be the jerk
in
this studio?
Jerk face.
I don't think either Wallace or Reba deserve to be nominated.
Well, who would you put in their place?
I have several. I would do
yes. Oh, that's right. Because you're still angry that Snow White and Mirror Mirror nominated, even though it's for technical aspects.
No, I don't mind. I don't mind that. How about Helen Mirren in Hitchcock? A really wonderful movie that not enough people saw.
That not enough people did see.
How about Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who was in a movie that almost no one saw called Smash?
Or Smash.
And she was fantastic in it.
Thank you for not saying flipping.
that's
what it would sound like it was going.
The thing was, I think those two, Wallace and Reba, got nominated because people wanted to have that talking point about the oldest ever and the youngest ever.
But you don't think either one of them carry it that strong?
No.
Christoph
Waltz was really a leading performance. Reva is a supporting performance. She's in the movie for the first 20-25 minutes, then her character is essentially in a coma, and she's in a bed the whole time, while the actor, who is the real protagonist of the movie,
takes over.
And by
the way, when you bring him up, you have to bring up Peter Falk in A Woman Under the Influence, and, oh my God, I'm terrible, the guy who worked opposite Julie Christie and away from her, there's a spouse that they bounce off of.
Yeah, and as for Wallace, yes, she's nice in it, and it's a very lyrical sort of movie. But, I mean, she's 6 years old. I mean, there's no complexity to the role because no six-year-old could bring any sort of complexity to the role.
But the simplicity makes it its complexity.
It's behavior. It's presence. I'll give you she has presence. Mm-hmm. But there's no way you can tell me that there's any sort of level of craftsmanship in that than a Helen Mirren or a Mary Elizabeth Winstead has.
Or the 4-year-old French girl in Ponette.
So there's my evil curmudgeon.
But yeah, you are a curmudgeon. Boy, you want the mug? You want my mug? So it's fine. All right. So now this is the first time that all previous winners have been in one category: best supporting actor.
I'm not sure if that's but
it's been a while. It's been a while.
All 5 guys have won the Oscar before.
Yep. Alan Arkin for Argo, Robert De Niro for Silver Linings Playbook, Philip Seymour Hoffman, The Master, Tommy Lee Jones for Lincoln, and Christoph Waltz, who, if I had a ballot, I would vote for him. He should be, as we said, he should be in the leading category. But like Meryl Streep in Kramer versus Kramer, he's got a better shot in the supporting role.
Right. Average age of the nominees, 63.
So it's Danny Trejo age. Wow. That's true. Now that I'm looking at I'm assuming Hoffman's the youngest of the group.
45. He's the baby of the group.
And by the way, while I'm on the awesomeness that is Christoph Waltz, if you haven't already gone, go on Hulu. He hosted Saturday Night Live last week. He's really good. There is even, everyone's favorite, Jesus Uncrossed.
Yeah.
Isn't
that cool, though? I mean, literally 2-3 years ago, he was a Austrian actor that one ever heard of. And now he's hosting Saturday Night Live.
I mean, I looked at it, it was one of those, it was like maybe a couple of titles I recognize. And since then, he has had a fantastic streak.
Christoph Waltz is awesome.
He is awesome. So
he and Jessica Chastain.
This show.
Yes.
He and Jessica Chastain have had the best last 3 years.
That's pretty good. So now the other, for this one, it seems like a lot of people, there's been the buzz, because I follow the buzz online and on the street, that it's De Niro could win his 3rd award, probably because this is his most notable work in 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, he's been good in a few things.
Here and there, but nothing.
Here and there. His first nomination in the last 20 years.
Since Cape Fear.
Yeah. I would pick Tommy Lee Jones. I just thought he nailed it. It was a strongly written part that he just dominated everything
he
was in.
It's kind of the hellfire and brimstone that we want from Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah. But I don't know. He's got this reputation as being a curmudgeon, both with the press and in Hollywood.
I think
the sentiment is going to swing towards De Niro. But that one, that supporting actor is a category that could go just about any way. And putting on my jerk hat again.
Wow.
Alan Arkin. I adore Alan Arkin. He had a fun, breezy role in Argo. He comes in and says, Argo, yourself.
Yeah, which is why that film got an R rating, which is undeserved. And that's another rant
best
from
support,
another time.
But Oscar nomination, it's just not a substantive enough role.
So that's where John Hawkes would be? I'm kidding,
what would John Hawkes' role?
John Hawkes should have been in yeah, that's another.
There's a bunch you could put in there. Javier Bardem.
Yeah, that's the other thing. If Christoph Waltz gets in the leading category, that makes room for Javier Bardem, who was fantastic in Skyfall.
Never been an acting nomination for a James Bond movie.
Well, let's be realistic. I'm a big James Bond fan.
I
wish there was a special Oscar for Ursula Andress and Honor Blackman and Famke Janssen, but there isn't.
I guess that's why people were so surprised by that performance, was because it actually had richness and depth.
Yes,
to it.
Absolutely. Okay, moving on. Wreck-It Ralph and really nobody else?
Yeah, it's either, the best animated feature has tended to be it's the Pixar movie, and if it's not the Pixar movie, it's the DreamWorks movie. The Pixar movie was
Brave,
which everyone thought was flat. The DreamWorks movie, Rise of the Guardians, did not even get nominated.
No.
So it looks like it's probably going to be Wreck-It Ralph.
Which was actually one of the bigger surprises, not just in animation, but I think one of the bigger surprise films of the year.
Yeah, it was a sweet movie, but again, being honest with ourselves, very weak year for animated movies.
Yes.
And that has the really cool short before it.
It does. Paperman, yes. Which...
is also up for an Oscar.
It is.
And may win.
It is, although I'm really pulling for Fresh Guacamole. Just in general. That was just cool and clever. And
102 seconds long.
Exactly. To the point. So definitely to the point. All right. The other thing here at Film Sociology, so we've determined, Kobe, we are Film Sociology's pro Christoph Waltz. Right?
Yeah.
We are your source for Christoph Waltz and Tommy Wiseau information.
Yeah. I'm also a production update, blog update. Now posting on the blog things that the show
is pro is
yes is pro
okay.
/ things that the show determines. First post, quote, Pam Grier is timeless. So says the show. You said that about Pam Grier.
It's true. Yeah. That's because it's fact.
So there we are.
Okay, so there's that. The other one is I'm saying the royal we because I have not really consulted
royal
you.
I
make fun of sports fans who say we because they're not on the court or the field. But we here at Film Sociology are also pro Roger Deakins. And I'm really, really hoping he gets Best Cinematography for Skyfall, which another one. It's Bond films don't get a whole lot of technical award nominations either, if any, I think.
Not too many.
But it's up against Anna Karenina, Django Unchained, Life of Pi, and Lincoln. Maybe. Look up Roger Deakins, see how many award nominations. He's got what? Do he have 12?
I have his. Let's see, I've got a.
Nope, there should be
here.
A thing that says awards.
Nominated for 10 Oscars.
10! Go through those, sir.
Let's see.
This now, of course, if you've seen Coen Brothers or Soderbergh. No, not Soderbergh. Todd, you're being called. See, here at Film Sociology, we have two neighboring radio stations, and Todd has to go. Todd, thank you for hanging out. We'll see you at Winefest next week. That's Todd Rayner, Director of Marketing at Cannes Fine Wines and Spirits. He has to go, so we have to acknowledge
it. He was our hostage, but now he's free.
Yes, he is now free. So
here we go.
Okay, here are the films that Roger Deakins has been nominated for. Be stunned that he has not received an award yet.
We will start at the beginning. 1995, Shawshank Redemption. 97, Fargo. 98, Kundun?
Kundun, the Scorsese film, yeah.
2001, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? 2002, The Man Who Wasn't There? 2008, No Country for Old Men? And The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford?
Four. Yep.
The Reader, 2009, True Grit, 2011, 2013, Skyfall.
Those
are some nice looking
films.
Those
are some great looking films. So I'm really hoping he gets it finally. The Susan Lucci of cinematographers.
Yeah.
Is there any categories you're looking forward to, Mr. Lloyd?
Director is really up in the air this year.
It is.
Just because Ben Affleck wasn't nominated, Catherine Bigelow wasn't nominated, Tom Hooper for Les Mis, he just won it 2 years ago for King's Speech
and
not nominated.
Not
Quentin Tarantino not nominated.
Right.
Instead we had to have Michael Haneke directing My Old Paralyzed Left Foot.
$1 million. Because you also didn't you also throw $1 million?
Oh, my million franc baby. Yeah.
Frank. I think I liked it better than you, but I
did like it more. It's a well done movie. I've just seen it many times before.
And I think it's for him. It's one of his dare I say, lighter films compared to Funny Games, The White Ribbon, and even Caché. And yeah. I really like Caché.
Caché is a good movie.
But yeah, this is 2 hours and 40 minutes with old folks who are slowly dying.
Here's what I'm certain of. If Ben hadn't suffered from the Paul Giamatti vote and he actually had gotten nominated,
he'd have taken Anakin's place. He'd win, yeah.
He would win because he has won just about everything. So you've got kind of all these, you know, I don't think Haneke or the guy's name from Beast of the Southern Wild, I can't pronounce.
I would vote him because
Ben Zeitlin.
Ben Zeitlin. But so maybe David O. Russell?
I am predicting David O. Russell is going to pull an upset and win this category. Again, just because Lincoln, I think people are seeing it as a great performance with a, you know, so-so storytelling around it. Ang Lee also has a good shot just because if you've seen Life of Pi,
Life of Pi is number two on my list.
If there's any movie this year that is, you know, you can say that is one director's singular vision, it's Life of Pi. So I think he definitely has a chance. But I think David O. Russell is going to sneak in here because it's very much an actor's movie. It's about performances rather than about, you know, storytelling and pyrotechnics. So actors make up by far the largest block of voters in the Academy. So I think they're gonna go for David O. Russell. So that's I'm picking a surprise.
And apparently nobody in Silver Linings Playbook wants to smash the face of David O. Russell. So
like
Lily Tomlin and George Clooney will be upset.
Yeah, people laugh about that I Heart Huckabees video. And if you have no idea what we're talking about, go on YouTube and look.
It's kind of like watching a woman go off in a public place.
Well, and him. The thing was, I think that actually damaged his career for a while.
And then he made The Fighter.
Yeah. I mean, there was like a long space
between Huckabees and The Fighter. I think there was a few years.
Like 7 years?
Not that long, really. Look up David O. Russell, would you please? See, that's why you're there, Mr. Slagle. Screenplay. I'm wondering if for original screenplay, you have Amour, Django Unchained, Flight, Your Film, Moonrise Kingdom, and Zero Dark Thirty. I'm hoping Tarantino wins just so he can have the speech.
I would probably give it to Tarantino just because I thought his most purely entertaining movie in a long time. The story was very cleverly constructed. Although again, I knock it. It has that Lincoln problem. It has a bad ending. The ending itself is fine, but that it has like a, you know, the 15 minutes right before the ending, which they should have just completely excised.
You mean the scene that Tarantino's in?
Yeah, the scene with Tarantino's in.
Of course.
Zero Dark Thirty, you know, probably would normally get the votes because, I mean, it's based on research and almost a journalistic kind of exploration. But again, that backlash thing, I think Amour is going to wind up the winner here because it's not going to win Best Film or Best Director or acting.
So it's
going to
get something.
So it's going to get something.
But foreign film. It'll get foreign film.
Oh, yeah. Pardon me. Yes. You would think it's
the gulag that is foreign. You're not allowed to be in a foreign. Oh, by the way, last year the film was France and foreign film was from Iran. Deal with it, folks.
Yeah.
So do we have a time span between I Heart Huckabees and The Fighter?
I Heart Huckabees 2004, Fighter 2010, nothing in between.
6 years.
A documentary short in 2004.
That doesn't count.
Nothing else.
Doesn't count.
Okay, so best adapted screenplay. Argo, Beast of the Southern Wild, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook.
Tough call. No,
that is tough.
The Academy has historically loved to use the screenplay awards as a makeup award. It's like, well, you didn't win for director or actor or like that, so we're going to throw you a screenplay. The classic example being Ben Affleck and Matt Damon for Good Will Hunting.
Or Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Or The Piano. Or The Crying Game.
So this one really could go anywhere. They could throw it to Beast of the Southern Wild for a promising newcomer. They could throw it to Life of Pi for just because people like the movie. Lincoln, I don't think it's going to win because
it went to the theater.
Because if people thought there were some problems with it. So I think this is, when we come down, I think every movie here has a shot. But I think it probably comes down to Silver Linings Playbook or Argo. I think Silver Linings is going to pull another upset and win here.
Because Argo's going to be winning elsewhere.
Right.
So,
And that's the mood this year. This is very much a spread the love.
Yeah, there's no sweep on this year. So, all right. Well, I think that's, you know what, I'm going to wrap things up with the Oscars because we have a big pile of dead people we like.
And do you really want to hear about best costume sound mixing production?
You can check that out online at Twitter.
Or the filmyup.com where we actually do have picks and predictions for all 24 categories.
And I'm at Matthew Sosi Sunday night. Oh, the other thing that we forgot to mention earlier, we were talking about movies with Snitch, and The Onion had a fun article about movies with snitches. two of which I remember giving to Kobe, which were two of the bases, Mr. Slagle, on your term about the 1970s.
Oh, they're slow, and it was a different time.
Yeah, it's the other way around, jerk face. But yeah, but because of that, the films were, again, The Informant, which I just watched again for the first time since I came out on Blu-ray. I watched it on Blu-ray last week. Still funny as hell from Steven Soderbergh. Serpico.
Awesome.
Excellent. You did like Serpico.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought that was one of the slow. Serpico. No, you thought Friends of Eddie Coyle was slow. Great Robert Mitchum film directed by Peter Yates. Silkwood with Meryl Streep and Donnie Brasco, which I need to watch again. I just remember calling it Death of a Gangster, but then again, I called Billy Bathgate Death of a Gangster. So we'll check those out. But on Blu-ray this week, thank you, Criterion, for making really cool things and making, you know, it's worth every penny, even though they don't send them to me. But on the waterfront. Now, I'm not saying Criterion said, oh, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson has a movie out. We got to put this out pronto. I think this was already scheduled. But yeah, a two-disc set of On the Waterfront in three different formats, two different widescreen formats and a pan scan format. I haven't gone through all of the bells and whistles just yet. But we have some audio. Crystal, I want to give you credit on this because and I'm so glad you brought it up on Facebook. But yes, everybody talks about the famous scene with Marlon Brando and Rod Steiger in the back of the car. That could have been a contender. It was you, Charlie, all that stuff. That's great. The other notable moment, and this was known as Carl Malden's Oscar win, his second supporting actor Oscar, first one, of course, for A Streetcar Named Desire. But this is Carl Malden in On the Waterfront, a guy who's been killed on the docks, finger quotes, by accident. And here's Carl Malden as the local priest talking to the guys on the waterfront.
I came down here to keep a promise. I gave K.O. my word that if he stood up to the mob, I'd stand up with him. All the way. And now K.O. Dugan is dead. He was one of those fellas who had the gift of standing up, but this time they fixed him. Although they fixed him for good this time. Unless it was an accident, like Big Mac says. Some people think the crucifixion only took place on Calvary. They better wise up. Taking Joey Doyle's life to stop him from testifying is a crucifixion. Dropping a sling on K.O. Dugan because he was ready to spill his guts tomorrow, that's a crucifixion. And every time the mob puts the pressure on a good man, tries to stop him from doing his duty as a citizen, it's a crucifixion. And anybody who sits around and lets it happen, keeps silent about something he knows has happened, shares the guilt of it just as much as the Roman soldier who pierced the flesh of our Lord to see if he was dead. Church, Father! Boys, this is my church. And if you don't think Christ is down here on the waterfront, you've got another guest coming.
Get off the dock, Father!
Tell you, don't do that.
Who signed you on, boy?
Let him finish.
Every morning, when the hiring boss blows his whistle, Jesus stands alongside you in the shape-up. He sees why some of you get picked and some of you get passed over. He sees the family men worrying about getting the rent and getting food in the house for the wife and the kids. He sees you selling your souls to the mob for a day's pay.
The next bum that throws something deals with me. I don't care if he's twice my size.
Now, what does Christ think of the easy money boys who do none of the work and take all of the gravy? And how does he feel about the fellas who wear $150 suits and diamond rings? On your union dues and your kickback money. And how does he, who spoke up without fear against every evil, feel about your silence?
Tell him about that!
Just watch this. You see that?
You want to know what's wrong with our waterfront? It's the love of a lousy buck. It's making love of a buck, the cushy job, more important than the love of man. It's forgetting that every fella down here is your brother in Christ. But remember, Christ is always with you. Christ is in the shape up, he's in the hatch, he's in the youth, he's kneeling right here beside Dugan. And he's staying with all of you. If you do it to the least of mine, you do it to me. And what they did to Joey and what they did to Dugan, they're doing to you.
And you. You. All of you. And only you. Only you, with God's help, have the power to knock him out for good.
Okay, K.O. Amen.
Doing our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this
week. We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
Weekly.
It's okay. You also said that we're watching film sociology, so it's still fantastic. All right, there's a lot of these I want to get
through. It's so intense. I see it in my mind.
We all see it. We have mental conversations with LeBron on occasion too. John Kerr, who's best known for probably two things, cinema wise. South Pacific and Tea and Sympathy. So, fun manly date movie. Not related to Deborah Kerr, his co-star in Tea and Sympathy. Richard Collins, blacklisted screenwriter, speaking of snitches. No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
Oh, jeez. But his ex-wife apparently was the character modeled after Marion Davies in Citizen Kane. But one of his most notable post-blacklist jobs, thank you, Onion, was the original treatment for 1956's Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Wow.
Also not about snitching. Jeff Cahill, who's 44 years old, played one of the orphans in The Blues Brothers.
Wow.
And then later appeared in The Shadow in 1993. Alan Sharp, I love this. The New York Times had the headline, Alan Sharp, writer of dark screenplays, dies at 79, known for films like The Hired Hand, that was directed by Peter Fonda, Olzana's Raid with Burt Lancaster, directed by Robert Aldrich, very cool, gritty Western from the early 70s. Night Moves with Gene Hackman and a young, tolerable Melanie Griffith and Susan Clark. What else he did? He also did the film that was supposed to be 20th Century Fox's big sci-fi extravaganza in 1977, Damnation Alley, with George Peppard, Jan Michael Vincent, Peter Finch, Jackie Earle Haley. What else he do? Billy Two Hats, The Last Run with George C. Scott. Did the screenplay for The Osterman Weekend, which was the final film directed by Sam Peckinpah. Also did the screenplay for Rob Roy with Liam Neeson and Little Treasure with Margot Kidder.
Rob Roy, best cinematic sword fight ever.
I think I'm with you on that one. That's very cool. Peter Wallhaus, who was 96 years old, was an Oscar winner for helping develop blue green screen techniques. And apparently worked on projects like Mary Poppins, The Birds, The Love Bug, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Ben-Hur, I think I mentioned. And I looked on his IMDb page, and I have to thank this because Joe Shearer gave me this Blu-ray as a gift. He was a technical advisor on Battle Beyond the Stars.
Oh,
the Roger Corman produced, John Sayles written, Richard Thomas starring with also Robert Vaughn and George Peppard, a space version of The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, with obvious Star Wars knockoff featuring a spaceship that looks exactly like a diagram of the female reproductive system.
Could be. And then one of the great English that guys, Richard Briers, who in British Teleclub land was in The Good Life with Felicity Kendall, but he was one of Ken Branagh's, one of Ken Branagh's regular actors. He was Adam in As You Like It, not a Ken film, but he was Smee in Peter Pan, played Polonius in Hamlet, Sir Nathaniel in Love's Labor's Lost. He was the grandfather in Frankenstein, Leonardo in Much Ado About Nothing, Lord Morton in Peter's Friends. He also played the older actor who played the ghost Claudius in Player King in A Midwinter's Tale. Yeah, he actually had played the bishop in Spice World, also not directed by Kenneth Branagh. He was Lieutenant Bardorf in Henry V, Good Neighbors, as I mentioned. But he was also a voice. This film freaked me out when it came out in 1978. He was one of the voices in Watership Down.
Oh, great movie.
Great movie. Not for an eight-year-old. So, unless he's really advanced, and I was not. All right, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
You can go check out Chris Lloyd and Joe Shearer's shenanigans at
thefilmyap.com.
So you can follow them on Academy Awards night on Sunday. You can follow me at Matthew Sosi. Kobe will be at Kobe Slagle. Yep. Oh, and Emma. Emma voted for Les Mis, Hugh Jackman, Anne Hathaway, Girl from Beasts of the Southern Wild, and Robert De Niro, and Wreck-It Ralph, and Skyfall for cinematography. And she really wants Adele to win.